Hashem, we're going to dedicate about 5-6 minutes each day before Shir. Obviously, you know, you're not here to learn a Gemara, to learn the Tosfos, to learn a Perek and Tanakh, but to engage in Hashem's Torah, and hopefully that should change your entire religious outlook and experience. And I hope that, just on that note, I know that we're trying to, now that Elul is over, Elul was a lot of things happening. So we wanted to make sure that we gave you enough space to acclimate and to grow. But now that it's post-El at night, we want to make sure that you start your night's data with 10, 15 minutes of Musar. And we handed out strongly, strongly recommended pamphlets. Each month we'll hand out different. Again, if you want to learn something else, the only thing I'll add, Rabbi Gottlieb met with the Shana Bet boys. The only thing I'll add is, in general, there's a tendency, I'd say there are two tendencies to be sensitive about. One is, a lot of people have an allergy to the word Musar. Probably a holdover from the fact they may not have read the right Musar Sfarim, and Musar sometimes is associated with very one-dimensional demonization. The world is full of filth, and you're filthy. And there certainly are strands of Musar like that, and people who are exposed to that exclusively get a very bad taste towards Musar. And I hope that some of the ideas we've expressed in this class have given a slightly different vista to how personal change can be enabled by Musar. Obviously, in a theoretical world, big debates that took place in the 19th century, is Musar necessary? Obviously, for people like us, the whole conversation is academic. If you feel you're at the level where learning a Tulsa is so religiously exhilarating for you that you become a different person, or your davening changes, and mitzvos change, well, you're a better person than I am. We're in a very confusing world, in a world in which the ability to translate cognitive Talmud Torah into existential changes is obviously important, and we stress it in yeshiva, but at least it has to be framed by frontal conversations and materials that evoke directly these questions. The other thing I'll say is I find a lot of people, when I ask them, what Musar are you learning before a night seder, let's say I'm learning Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm learning Rabbi Amital, I'm learning Rabbi Lichtenstein. I understand the draw. I just want to warn you, and therefore we're not recommending these Sfarim, is that part of change in life is to be pushed out of your comfort zone. And I would say that as far as other yeshivas, in a way that's respectful, but that's challenging. And I try to do that to you by helping you, in a ginger fashion, question the values, not the values, but the dosages and the balances that you've been accustomed to say maybe they have to be reset or recalibrated. I think there are many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. Your formulation is those that want you to flip out and from out and indoctrinate you. I think a lot of yeshivas are very, very aggressive in holding up a mirror to your past and saying, well, does everything stack up? And maybe if it doesn't, maybe you should completely jump ship and join some other community or some other series of values. I don't think that's our message here. I don't think we're aggressive or disrespectful. I think that probably the moment that was the most important to stress that was when the question of 2 days or 1 day came up, and no one in this yeshiva said, we're discrediting your past halachos and your past rabbanim, and this is what you should keep. It's because we know that you come from solid Torah communities, and we have to see your time in yeshiva as a continuation of those experiences. The problem is, if it's too much of a continuity, then sometimes it's too much of a comfort zone and a relaxed attitude. I just be who I was beforehand, and I just have to learn a few more skills and a few more tools. And I think there has to be a healthy sense of doubt. Someone once said that doubt for the layman is integrity for the scholar. If you're a scholar, you're always doubting yourself. You're always questioning. As we've talked about, no communal formula is perfect. And you want to try to be as perfect as you can. And quite frankly, if this year were taking place in Bnei Brak, in Panavish, I wouldn't change this year whatsoever. What are the flaws and what are the limitations of the Haredi world? And how can you become a more complete person? Not by sheepishly accepting all the dogmas of that world, but by living in that world and then trying to improve beyond. And that's really the level of education I follow with my kids. I never want them to see themselves as mainstream Alon Shvud or mainstream Dati Lomi, because I think you're going to max out by ever going mainstream. To be perfect, you really have to mix and match and combine and question, what about your community do you want to accept, and what about your community needs tinkering and needs change and needs alteration. And I think that's true in general in your time here in yeshiva, and in particular with Musar. If you're going to spend your whole year reading ideas that essentially you've been bred upon and educated upon, it'll be reinforcing, but I'm not sure it will be as transformative. So if you expose yourself to views from slightly different, I don't want to say different worlds, because to call them Masil Sisharim in the 18th century, different worlds, a different era. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're reading someone from a different community. Our communities didn't exist in the 18th century. But I think we want to try to expose you in a healthy sense to ideas that are thought-provoking, that are intelligent, that are coherent. But on the other hand, it's not just reading Rav Soloveitchik again, and reading Rav Aaron again, and reading. So I strongly recommend, and again, whether it's Night Seder, I strongly recommend pushing yourself a little bit out of that zone that you've been taught about, but I just want to make sure that you take it seriously. Anyway, so that's part of what we'll do before each year. We'll try to just talk about a midah that is relevant to the time in yeshiva, relevant to the parasha. I'm going to start Mirat Hashem next week. We'll spend about a month meaning 5 minutes before each year on Tefillah, because Vayera through Vayetze are really the core parashios that develop how our avos daven. I'm just trying to give you different tips, so at the beginning of the year, we can start working on how we daven. But Lech Lecha, we don't really see Avram davening yet. It's something that he advances to in Parshas Vayera. So Parshas Lech Lecha, we'll still talk about some general midos, and then Richard, next week, we'll start with Tefillah. One of the challenges of living in a democratic era is that democracy was established, thank God it was established, to protect the rights of men and to protect whatever you decide those core inalienable rights to be: life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and equality, possession of land. On the flip side, we become a country, we become a people, modern man, that's very attuned to their rights and very attuned to what is mine, and I'm going to sue you. And in some ways, it's a litigious problem that we become hypersensitive to creating a litigious system to protect human rights. There was an event that took place about 20 years ago, a little bit less, that really highlighted the absurdity that some of this was hurtling towards, where a customer purchased hot coffee in a McDonald's, and the coffee spilled, and that person sued McDonald's for a multi-million-dollar lawsuit for spilling their own coffee. Now, it's not as simple as it made it sound, but that certainly was always seen as the low light of a litigious society, and that's why when you pick up a coffee in Starbucks, there's a sleeve on it with a warning just to protect them against legal responses, illegal suits and prosecution. Again, that story is a little more complicated than I'm making it out to be, but it certainly caught the imagination of many people that this is something, a system run amok. It also creates a theological issue. What are we born for in this world? Are we born for rights? Are we born for duties? Certainly someone who's in Oved Hashem doesn't see himself or herself as placed in this world to protect their rights and to advance their rights. Obviously, your rights are necessary to be protected, so that your imagination, your resources, your freedom can be exerted properly. When man is subjugated and persecuted, it's very hard to develop his creativity and to create and to change and to develop Torah ideas. You're constantly being persecuted and pursued. But one of the challenges in life is it makes the following midah much more difficult. Chazal say, "Kol ha-mavir al midosav mavirim lo." If you're someone that from time to time, I'll use a harsh word, but I don't mean it this way, forfeits and gives way and doesn't always demand what's yours and is able just to have, I would call it nobility of spirit, and to be generous, generosity of spirit. There's generosity with your money. There's generosity with your food. Someone asks you for food, you give generosity of spirit. Your spirit is being affected by someone who's screaming too loud next to you in the Beis Medrash, who is davening too loud, and then you're able just to say or hurt your feelings and just say, I have enough spirit to be generous about it. I'm not going to retaliate. I'm not going to say something negative. I'll just let it pass. I'll be a little more tolerant. A lot of guys your age have a hard time with stimuluses in your environment, things that bother you, people chewing gum so loud or talking too loud, or you get caught in certain mannerisms and behaviors of others and become obsessed with it and it bothers you and you can't look at that person. And it's more than if these things in the bud. And you see this in Avram's case. Avram Avinu has really stewarded his nephew, Lot, to Eretz Canaan. He's protected him. He's adopted him. They've been through wars together, figuratively in Mitzrayim. And now there's the argument that erupts between Avram's shepherds and Lot's shepherds. And you really see two things. First of all, and I don't know how to tell this to you because I remember hearing this message when I was your age and I didn't fully appreciate it. When you get older and you live in communities and things get very, very incendiary, and then you have to be careful about it. That Avram rather says, "Al tihi meriva b'nei v'necha, v'venu ayu v'venu recha." I don't want there to be a machlokas. Machlokas is a very, very corrosive, very, very dangerous. And sometimes it's important to run away from a machlokas. Sometimes people, "Oh, it's just politics. Why don't you say something? Because I don't want to cause strife." It's not politics. You're not holding back an opinion because of politics. It's because you feel that fraternity and harmony is a higher value and whatever position you happen to hold about a certain idea, and you're willing to forgo your position or to forgo expressing that position, because when people pool their talents, you just can accomplish more emotionally, communally. Chazal tells us that the door of the Mabul, they were annihilated. And the door of Migdal Bavel, they were just scattered. And one of the differences is because the door of Mabul exhibited harmony and solidarity that the door of Mabul couldn't reach. They were constantly stealing and cheating and violence and derision and the social fabric unfurled. Whereas in Migdal Bavel, as I talked about in the Shir, there's a high degree of solidarity and unity. Unfortunately, it wasn't employed properly, but Hashem recognizes and accredits, though, Machzik, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give a clean Machzik Bracha aside from Shalom. And that's a phrase in the Gemara, and it's a phrase that's very important. It's a clean Machzik Bracha. If you have Shalom, it's a utensil that can then advance certain other agendas. Without Shalom, everything is just so chaotic and angry and antagonistic. There's no framework. There's no place. Everything just gets wasted. So it's not the content. Shalom is not the content. It's the framework. But without a framework, all your content will be squandered. So Avram is the first to assert the need. And certainly in the backdrop of all the hostility of Sefer Parshas Bereishis and all the death of Parshas Noach and all the verbal hostility between Noach and his children, it's a fresh, and not that he's not unable to avoid the confrontation in Mitzrayim, but again, he doesn't enter into a verbal confrontation with Paro. I'll talk about this in Mitzrayim Wednesday night. But it's very clear that he prioritizes harmony rather than personal gain. And then when he has to split from Lot's entourage, which is very painful for him, and to the degree he's moving backwards because he's supposed to embrace people and draw them to his group, to his church, to his movement. So he's bleeding. Instead of drawing people to his movement, he's bleeding people that are already in the movement, and Lot is departing. But he says, you know what, you go right, I'll go left, I go right. Basically, I'm not going to sit there and litigate with you. My lawyers, your lawyers, just... not everything has to be exactly punctiliously, precisely negotiated. It's got to be an ability for purpose, an ability of spirit. Not everyone has that ability and expresses itself in different ways, and certainly financially sometimes it's very difficult. But see if you can have that. See if something this week, if you can reach that trait. I always like to concretize it. I don't like to juvenilize it. Okay, everyone, go down and write in your diary tonight how you acted like Avram Avinu and Lot over the next 24 hours. But on the other hand, if ideas just come and go, you don't act upon them so they can slip out of consciousness. If you're aware of the process and say, well, this week, just to yourself, you know, I had this interaction with so-and-so, and I was just able to let go. I was able to be larger. There's an expression in Hebrew called to be large. I mean, larger than someone else, or larger than the situation, I think it's very helpful. So just try to think about that trait and see when you can implement it. Obviously, not just this week and all these traits. Don't get frustrated if you can't reach them, if you can't attain them, because you're young and the earlier you start, there's a lot of trial and error in life. I can only tell you that I don't mean this. I never mean it autobiographical. I just sometimes mean it to make it more real. I can compile a list of 10 or 12 traits that I've worked very, very hard in my life to acquire that I didn't possess naturally. There's certain traits I had naturally, but I was a very different person. If you went back in a time machine and you went back to see me as an 18-year-old, you probably wouldn't recognize me. Not just that I had less gray hair, but you probably wouldn't recognize me. I'd be scoring 36 points a night, but probably wouldn't recognize me because I'd be a very different person. And over the last 35, 40 years of my life, I've worked really hard to acquire certain traits. So, but it didn't come naturally, and there were stops and starts and bumps in the road. But if you take personal development seriously, you can really become, each in your own way, as a fantastic person. So just try hard and take these things seriously, and you'll see, you'll just be double the person you were before. And when that's wedded to Torah and religion, it all comes together. Torah, your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your personality, just put it all together, and it just makes sense. It works. You take life seriously. Okay. Today, we're going to take a look at a very, very...